Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hey everyone, and welcome to episode 82 of Slamfire Radio for November 6th, 2014. I'm the warning shot. That's it, just me. I'm the warning shot. Don't jump in here, guys. I know what I'm doing because I've done this 82 times already.
Just stand there and be quiet. Remember the part just before we started where you said to Owen, you're going first.
Right. Well, no, I meant for what you're doing with guns.
Yeah. But then the awkward pause, and I went, oh, because I'm lead next week, therefore I'm the one that's supposed to say who I am this time.
Right.
Next. Yeah, I'm Owen Flewellyn. Hi, Mom. I'm on a podcast.
And I am Trevor Furlott. Welcome to Slamfire Radio.
Welcome to the chaos.
I don't understand how every week we still screw up intro and the outro. Outtake, outro. It's all outtakes, pretty much.
It's all outtakes, really. The whole show is an outtake. We're very sorry.
You think one day we could kind of get this straight?
Maybe next week we'll get it right. Guys, eventually we'll get there.
Yep.
Maybe. Probably. All right. Owen, why don't you tell us what you did with guns this week?
Okay. Well, a few things. Some things still in the works I'm not going to talk about yet because it's not finalized. Okay, maybe I will talk about it.
I was just going to say, thanks for the teaser.
Yes, that's the teaser.
Guys, I did some really cool stuff. I'm not going to tell you, but it was awesome.
when I say that, you know I've done something illegal.
That's okay. Last week, Owen, you were hiding a body. I don't know if you listened to the show yet or not, but that's why you couldn't be on.
I was hunting a body?
Hiding. Well, you hunted it first, then you hided it.
I don't listen. You think I listen to the show when I'm not on?
You probably should, because those are the things we say about you when you're not there.
That's right.
And on this week's show, it's just Matthew and Trevor, because Owen's out hiding a body. So, Matthew, what'd you do this week in guns? Well, I didn't hide a body, Trevor.
Yes, I should listen to the show more often.
Yes, you should. Or at least have your attorney do it.
So, this week was kind of exciting for me because I retrofitted my Norinco M305 and put on the Archangel stock and mounted a bipod and mounted the CASM scope mount rail thingy on the top.
Yeah, no, scope mount rail thingy. You nailed it. Yeah,
that's I think what Kyle called it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kyle actually recommended that over the ProMag, and I've never handled a ProMag, but I was a little bit skeptical when I first got it. Beautiful finish to this scope mount. But I was like, it doesn't look like it's really sturdy the way they want it mounted. For people who don't know, the M305 has a slot and tapped receiver on one side that I believe a lot of the scope mounts out there attach to. This doesn't. This actually removes the rear sight assembly, and it has two bolts on either side that go in through the holes on either side of where the rear sight would be, where the adjustment screws are or adjustment knobs, and actually bolt into the side of the scope mount. And then the front just sits on the front of the receiver, just ahead of the, just over top of the chamber, and it just sits there.
It's not attached at all?
It's not attached.
But
it's just tension. Basically,
it's tensioned on. Okay. Gotcha. So there is a lot of tension there then.
Yeah. Because when you tighten in the back, it forces tension onto the front, and they actually say, be very careful, because there's an adjustment screw in the front. They say, be very careful not to tighten that down too far, or you can actually torque or break or, you know, damage the mount.
Interesting. So is it solid though, in your opinion?
Oh, absolutely. It's rock solid. I can't see how you could move it. Unless you stuck a piece of steel bar in there and wedged on it.
Well, isn't that like the standard manual of arms for a double feed?
Yeah. Get out the crowbar.
First thing you get a double feed, rip off your scope mount.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just have a Bushnell 3x9 stuck in this for now with scope rings that are too high, just because that's what I had kicking around the house, and I spent all my money on the stock, so I don't have money for a scope right now. But that will be in the works. Maybe.
But you should have money for scope rings. I mean, come on. Scope rings are what?
I thought about that, and then I said, I could go spend the money on the scope rings, and then maybe they don't fit what I end up getting for a scope, because I don't really know what I want for a scope yet.
Oh, you don't know if you're going to get a 30 mil or a 1 inch.
Who knows?
Owen, if you do go with a 30 mil, I have a set of Burris tactical 30 mil rings that were supposed to go on my TAC-21, but I believe they were too low. And the company replaced them for free and let me keep them. So they're brand new in the package, 30 mil. So
that'll be good because I also need super low ones.
I do. And I also knew that if I just kind of left it hang out there, that Trevor would offer to give me stuff.
Right.
So if everything is working according to my plan.
maybe a listener out there has an old scope that they don't need anymore. And by old, I mean, you know, a Vortex Viper or something.
Well, that being said, Owen, I am replacing the scope that came on the new gun that I just bought with a Viper, and I'll have no use for this Weaver. And I have a set of the same aluminum rings that came with the scope. So you can borrow that until you get something better.
Yeah, that would tie you over for a season or two.
It's a great scope. It really is.
Yeah. What is it?
It's a Weaver 3-9 by 40 with kind of a bullet drop reticle. And it has the paperwork came with it that talks about, you know, if you zero this round at this distance of this caliber, then this is your holdover, blah, blah, blah. It's pretty impressive for a scope that came on a gun.
Yeah, if you're replacing that with a Viper anyway, Trevor, Owen, that would work for you.
Yeah. I've got the scope and the rings, because I replaced the aluminum rings with steel Grand Slam rings. And
I don't know exactly what I'm doing that yet for that. So, like I said, I just threw the Bushnell 3x9 just because I had it kicking around, and it'll work just for, you know, the rest of the season.
Well, that Bushnell 3x9 is probably better than this Weaver, actually.
It's just a regular old scope. It's not like a, you know, doesn't have any sort of fancy reticles inside. It's just a simple crosshair. I do want something eventually that has some notches for, you know, kind of holdovers and stuff. Yeah. But anyway, impressions of the stock, it's pretty good. It's a little heavier, I think. It changes the balance of the gun, where the factory stock has had a lot of sort of metal in the butt. The butt plate was metal. The shoulder thingy that goes up was metal. You know, the cleaning rod and there was a bunch of stuff that goes in the back of the gas tube. Tool that's all in the back of the stock. It added a lot of weight to the back of the gun, which was kind of nice. It had a nice feel. Well, you take all that out, it's all plastic in the back, and now you've got a bipod hanging off the front, things like that. It adds more weight to the front. I weighed the gun, but my scale doesn't go that heavy, so I have no idea how much it weighs.
More than 11 pounds.
More than 11 pounds, but I don't mind that. I know people think I'm crazy, especially you, Matthew. You despise a heavy gun, but I
just think you're crazy regardless whether you have a heavy gun or not. You're definitely crazy.
I pick up this gun and I go, I wouldn't want to walk the bush with this, but for what I built it for, I don't care really the weight of it.
Well, that's the thing, eh? And I don't mind a heavy gun if it's designed for sitting in a tree stand or designed for shooting off of a bench at the range. That's fine. Be as heavy as you want. In fact, the heavier the better. But that's not my style of shooting. I prefer to be out and about walking and hiking through brush and stuff. So I like a light short gun. So that's just personal preference. I can't wait to shoot yours actually off the bench. It'll be fun.
Yeah. I mean, again, I have a gun for that, and I have a gun for this purpose as well. So
yep, exactly.
I've got to learn the 308 round now. I kind of, with the ARs, I've learned the 223 round and what it's capable of and what it's, you know, what it's like to shoot and, you know, where to sight in at. And so that's the big thing for this. I've got to sight it in. And I have to now figure out what do I want to sight it in at.
Right.
So to get kind of my most efficient range, you know.
Yeah, that'll depend on what scope and what reticles you get too. Depending on what you have for drops, you might want to, you know, sight in at 2 or 1 or 3 or you don't know, right? Until you match everything up together.
Yeah.
I would say just for now, for practicing at the range and just getting ready, just zero it at 100 for now. Just
I think that's what I'm going to do at 100. Just, I mean, again, if I'm in a situation where I'm hunting really close, I'm not carrying this gun anyway. I'm just taking my 30-30 and,
that's right,
and open sights, and that's it. Yep. But for, I need this gun to be able to reach out, and that's the point of it. And that's why I have it, is because I am getting into situations where I'm hunting where I'm just not comfortable with the other gun reaching out that far.
Yep. So, makes sense.
No, it's great. It looks pretty good. It'll look better when I have a better scope on it.
Yeah, it will. Yeah, and better rings. I mean, it would look fine with that scope if you didn't have rings that were the size of the CN Tower.
Yeah, they're pretty tall.
But you could see your sight. Oh, no, you don't have a rear sight anymore. I was going to say, they're really see-through rings, so you can...
The interesting thing about this scope mount, the one from M14.ca, CASM, it's called. It's hollow down the center. It's grooved out down the center. So you just have a rail on either side. And in the back, there's a little tiny peep. So you can actually use it like a rear sight.
And can you see your front sight through that?
I can, except for the fact that my scope is set so high right now that my cheek piece is so high I can't get my face down right long enough to look through it.
But if you had your cheek piece down, I wonder if that's zeroed at any sort of nominal distance that you'd be able to use it.
Who knows? I have no idea. Basically, I just heard that it's there just to, you know, just up close and personal
just in case.
Stuff. Yeah.
Just in case the grouse attack again.
So that you never know.
Look, these things have been known to happen.
It happened to me. I was up a tree stand hunting bear in the fall, and like six of them all at once came out of the woods. And all I had, it's so funny. I leaned over the side of the tree stand. I popped one, and the rest just kind of doop 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 doop. What happened to Fred? Doop 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 doop. Turn around and just walked back in the same direction they came from. It's just, they just kind of like stopped, turned, and they didn't even stop. They just kind of made like a swooping turn and went back the way they came.
Wrong way, guys, wrong way. Go back.
Nonchalantly. Why is Fred having a seizure?
Leave him. Just walk away like you don't see anything.
Yeah, it's like a $12 broadhead to a partridge.
No, that's worth it, basically. I mean, especially when you consider you got almost a whole pound of meat and chicken is only 99 cents a pound. So, exactly. That's a great deal.
Yeah, and I couldn't get the broadhead back either. It went through the partridge and into a root in the ground. Like, they're like from the tree I was sitting on. It went into a I screwed the arrow, left the broadhead in the ground.
Oh, that's crazy.
But the moral of the story is I defended my life with a bow and arrow.
You certainly did. And you brought home a tasty snack.
Exactly.
Yeah. Cool. What else did you own?
Oh, it's more what I'm about to do, I think. I think I'm about to sell my Ruger 10/22, and I'm about to pick up a shotgun.
Matthew sounds heartbroken.
I'm about to pick up a shotgun, and I'm not sure really what else. I'm kind of right in this mode of swapping and adjusting, but I don't really know why. So
yeah, you've got a cool pump action shotgun now, and you've got a cool hunting shotgun.
Yeah, well, yes. The problem is I have a lot of people that want to go with me. You know, they're licensed to hunt. Maybe they don't have a gun, though, and you can't hand them a KSG.
I'm the same as you, Owen. I have two guns here at the house, well, three actually, that I will just hand to whoever is hunting with me that day. I've got a couple of friends who live in the States and don't have guns over here. Or actually, they live here, but they're from the States. They don't have their guns here yet. So if we go hunting, I just give them one of mine. And I've got a couple just for that purpose. I don't use them at all myself.
Yeah.
But I've got them for other people. And, you know, when the nephews get older and they want to carry a shotgun in the woods, I've got a gun for them, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah. So I see where you're coming from. And it is nice to have a couple of spares just to kind of loan out to people who aren't 100% prepared yet.
Especially something as versatile as a pump action shotgun. I mean, you can do anything with it.
Paddle a canoe, cook a chicken. I mean, I don't know what you can't do with a pump action shotgun, really.
Yeah. And I think I would like to have something for Amy, just because she did go goose hunting with me once this year, which is probably all I'm going to get out. But next year I can see it happening more, and it would be good to have just something for her to go for the, you know, one or two times that she would want to go. So,
right. Makes sense. You're looking for an 870, or are you still on the fence about a Mossberg?
Well, no, I've actually, what I have lined up, and I haven't actually got it yet. I haven't finished the deal. I'm working on that. But it's a Stevens 350.
Oh, okay.
So it's actually what I started out originally wanting.
Yep.
Because, you know, it has a field barrel, and I just need to pick up a short, you know, like an 18 and a half inch barrel for it. And then I can just swap out the barrels and I have both my guns that way. A tactical kind of short conventional shotgun with one, you know, with a field barrel, field length shotgun. So.
Yep. Cool. Well, that'll work.
So yeah, that's kind of all in the works. Not sure what's going to happen yet exactly. I'm talking to a guy on Facebook about him possibly buying the 10/22. I'm just selling the 10/22. I haven't figured out why I'm selling the 10/22 yet.
Yeah, I haven't figured that out either.
Yeah. I think you're going to regret it. I agree. You need another pump shotgun or pump shotgun, but I would keep it. I
mean, you may not regret it if you replace it with a Marlin 795.
That's the plan.
Well, that's a good plan. I wholeheartedly approve.
Yeah, I just don't know if that's going to happen right away.
Right.
I might just sell it and just sell it. And,
well, they are expensive. I mean, $180.
Yeah, they've gone up $40 in 2 years because of their popularity. Buggers.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that's you know, kind of that's where I'm leaning is towards $795 because I like yours. I've handled yours and I really like them.
Yep.
But again, I just have to see because I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, makes sense.
I don't have any particular sentimental attachment to the 10/22 as a platform.
Right.
And it's a 22 semi-automatic and it's a good gun. I mean, lots you can do, but I'm not interested in, you know, putting some, you know,
tactical stock and all that other stuff.
Yeah,
it's just a 22. Yeah. It's just a truck gun
It's just a 22. Yeah. And I like it because it's got the short barrel and stuff. But honestly, if I have to pick, I'd rather shoot my Savage. If I had to pick one of the two, that's the gun I pick up.
Well, it's more accurate for sure.
Yeah. The Savage will be.
Yes.
If you don't want a tricked out semi, then definitely the Marlin 795 is the way to go. It's more accurate. If you want tricked out and kind of more availability of parts, 10/22.
That's absolutely right. And you can make a 10/22 as accurate as a 795 and more accurate than a 795 and as accurate as a Savage. But you pay a lot of money to do it. But it's fun. And I've done it before and it is fun. It's a process. And some people just enjoy building guns and all the power to you. Go nuts. So, yeah.
Cool. So what do you think I should sell the 10/22 for?
I'll give you $100.
I'll give you $105.
$106. I'm not selling it to you guys.
Oh.
What's the matter with us? I thought we were friends.
Yeah. Gosh. Yeah,
exactly. That's why I'm not selling it to you.
So what you should do to figure out a fair market value is go on Canadian Gun Nuts, find out what they're going for on the equipment exchange there, and then knock off 20%, and that'll be about approximately fair market value because everything on there is overpriced.
Yeah, I'm probably going to sell this to somebody locally.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what they
knew. They're like $300 new.
I'd say probably $250, $225, somewhere in there.
I've got some, like two factory mags, two 10-round factory mags and two Butler Creek. Like
yeah, I'd say probably $250.
So that's what I'm thinking, just because of the mags.
Yeah.
So.
Cool.
Anyway, that's about all I did.
So, Trevor, what did you do this week?
I finally got to go hunting.
What? You hunt?
Yeah. Sadly, it wasn't bow hunting, unfortunately. I did do a little bit of archery shooting, but that was just around. Did you get the text I sent you?
I did, yes.
Yeah.
So. It wasn't that impressive, so I didn't reply back.
All right. I want to see you do the same then. And
at 5 yards, no problem.
Okay, good, do it. Oh, it's just to keep the form and the technique going, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
I was supposed to go out last night to the local range.
Okay, archery? No, guns. What did you do with guns?
Shut it. I was supposed to go check out the archery range here, but I ended up caught up at work and didn't get there in time. But then I found out that they don't have a full-length range anyway, so now I'm not even sure if I'm going to bother going.
It's too bad you didn't get caught up at work tonight for this podcast. We could talk more about guns.
All right, so back to the hunting then. Muffin and I went hunting, and Jason took his girlfriend's son with him as well, the same one that keeps beating us at trap.
Yeah.
Yeah, he pretty much beat us at hunting too.
Nice.
He got out to take a shot on a partridge and...
Grouse.
Jason said, don't forget to aim for the head. And William came back with a partridge, no head.
Nice.
Yeah, just took the head clean off it.
That's the way to do it. No cleaning there, at least not the head part.
We went to, I didn't know that people in New Brunswick actually hunted this way. Up here, you hear that everybody in this part of the province goes to a place called Riley Brook. So I thought they just went to the village of Riley Brook and then went into the woods near Riley Brook. But they don't. They follow Highway 17, the same way road I would take to go to your place, Matthew.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get off and go into basically a large wood lot owned by the Fraser Company. And they pay $10 a person. They register your vehicle, write down your license plate number, and charge you $10 a head to hunt on their property.
Wow.
I didn't know this. It's capitalism, baby. You want to hunt on my land, you pay for the privilege.
Hey, it's their property, absolutely. At least they're letting you. There are some places that'll just, nope, no hunting here, sorry.
Exactly. So anyway, I was quite surprised. There's not much left there, though. We saw tons and tons of crazy moose sign. Moose rubs and scrapes, not scrapes, but rubs, like I've never seen before. Lots of tracks. Only one set of deer tracks, fresh, but nothing around. But, you know, fair amount of partridge. Grouse.
Thank you.
The first one we came to was up in a tree, and we maybe in about 10 minutes of legal hunting light, and McIntyre spots it from like 80 yards away up a tree. Gets nice. Out, walks up to the tree, gets underneath the tree, and the second the grouse takes off, he pops it, and it just goes up and straight down, toss in the back of the truck. We'll come back to that one later. Next, it's my turn. It steps off of the road, and I'm kind of bending down, looking at it. It steps out from behind a tree. You take a shot, and it just walks away. Completely missed.
Yeah, those happen.
Yeah. The next one is William. So he comes out with the headless partridge.
Nice.
And so at the end of the day, we each got two. The one that Jason got first, there was nothing left to it. When I went to clean it, it just completely came apart.
I bet. I mean, right underneath it, and then just boom.
Yeah.
It was a 12-gauge, I imagine, right?
Yeah, 12-gauge full choke. But he was a ways up. I mean, it was a tall tree. Like, he was like 10, 15
Still,
yards.
Still, full choke. Those are good out to 40 yards. I mean,
exactly.
It wasn't a 40-yard tree, let me tell you. I'm sure of it.
The ones that I got was kind of neat. It was a long ways off, so I stepped up. I got within 25. That's what Jason figured. I was about 25 away. Shot it, and then a second one took off. There was two, and they were lined up, and I could only see one.
Mm-hmm.
So when I shot the first one, it went down. The other one took off and just landed just inside the tree line off the side of the road. Loaded the gun, walked over, and shot it. So I got my two, like, boom, boom, right there. I'd never done that before, yeah.
Yeah, they often will do that. Plenty of times I've been out hunting and a grouse will flush and I'm like, stank, you know, kick a rock because I missed it. And I go trunching into the woods to go after it. Well, then another one takes off right from where the first one was. Mm. And I've done that enough times now to realize that when one goes, okay. Just hang around, stay quiet, look, keep your ears open. Maybe there's another one there. And more often than not, I can pick off one because there's one left over.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and then the last, Jay was kind of wishing he had a 22 because we were on our way out and there was like 5 minutes left of legal hunting light and there was three up a tree.
Oh, yeah, yeah. 22 would be nice because they probably might not fly just with the 22 crack.
Exactly. So he shot the one in the center and then one banked right and one banked left and that was it. They were gone. He didn't get any chances. So, so I brought with me for a deer rifle my Attack 21. Which I didn't want to take my 30-30. I didn't want to take my 223 and my Savage, my 300 Savage Model 99, 300 Savage is not finished yet. I brought it to my guy to get it restored and refinished, and he said that won't be ready until January. And I forgot about that gun when, on the way home, I stopped and bought a 30-06.
I forgot I owned a 30-06, so I bought another one.
Well, I forgot that I owned a Savage 300, right?
So a 300, right, yeah.
I don't have a deer gun. Jay, let's go to Canadian Tire. So, I mean, I sold my my Mark 18 to save money, air quotes, for a truck, and bought two guns.
Bought two guns.
Yeah, well, I bought 30-06. I bought a Savage Model 111 30-06, and I took that to the range today, sighted in, very impressed with the gun. When I first got it out of the box, the scope rings, one of the mounts onto the base, the scope ring where it mounts onto the base, was on there sideways.
Right.
So the first thing I did actually was I secured the receiver to the stock. It wasn't tight, so I torqued that down. And then I was going to red Loctite the bases to the receiver, but I instead ordered a single or a one-piece base. And I had some steel Weaver Grand Slam rings. So I took those out, put those on the gun, relapped them with my lapping bar, and mounted.
Do you have the one-piece yet?
No, it's in the mail. It's coming from Cabela's, yeah. So, and it's got a really neat Weaver scope, 3-9, with a couple of bullet drop marks in the reticle. So pick that up, and the last three boxes of 30-06 that they had, sighted it in today, shot pretty much sub-MOA. Unfortunately, I had a flyer in each group that opened it up to...
And by a flyer, you mean you flinched. Because usually a flyer, it's the ammo's fault. Right. You hear a flyer is in 22 ammo a lot because 22 is very inconsistent. A flyer is the ammo's fault. A round outside of where you're aiming, that's generally your fault.
So as I was saying, I had a flyer.
And, sure you did.
Kind of messed up the group a little bit. But anyway, overall, I'm very impressed with it. We're going back on...
Well, you put some pictures up on Facebook.
I did, groups.
And I'm impressed. I mean, that was some good shooting. And flyers or not, even those flyers were inside of a boiler room and a deer.
Yeah,
I mean...
Yeah, big time.
You're going to have no problem with this
still,
gun.
Yeah, it was still... Well, what do you think? The worst one was still under 2 inches?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so. And this was Remington Core-Lock, 150 grain.
Yeah, this is factory ammo. Wait till you start loading your own.
Exactly. And I went back to Canadian Tire the next day to see if they had any one-piece scope bases and bought a set of 30-06 dies.
Right. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. So I just got to find some recipes and some IMR powder I think I'm going to go with.
Yeah.
I bought a PLUX M&P 9. So
and that's for partridge, right? Or wait, grouse?
And grouse, yeah. That's my grouse gun. No, I really like it. Especially like compared to
a Glock, for sure. It's way better, right?
The grip is more comfortable on the M&P than it is on the Gen 3, but I still like the Gen 4 much better. It's got the smallest backstrap on, which is pretty similar to the same grip size as a Gen 4 Glock.
Yep.
I can manipulate the magazine release on the M&P and on the Gen 4 Glock, but I can't reach the mag release on the Gen 3 Glock.
Right. Well, that is the one thing about the M&P 9s that I'm really impressed with is the ergonomics of their grip. It is very, mm-hmm. very comfortable. If you guys both didn't own Glocks and I felt the peer pressure and have to go with the same gun you guys had, I totally would have gone M&P 9. But
yeah.
I agree.
I don't blame you. The M&Ps are great guns.
Yep. I don't think they have the same track record as... Well, they don't. They don't have the same track record as a Glock. They haven't been around as long as a Glock.
Exactly.
The Glock just, you know it's going to work. The Glock's the AK-47 of the pistol world.
Yeah.
So, I'm going to stick with my Glock for sure. But as a secondary gun or even a tertiary gun, the M&P 9 is a nice choice for sure.
I can't wait to, using the same ammo in each to check and see what the accuracy is like with the M&P.
Yeah.
They both have, I'll compare it to my Gen 4 Glock. That one has a similar trigger pull. The only downside or criticism that I hear from M&P owners is that after about 5,000 rounds, the springs wear out and you start to get malfunctions. So.
Right. Well, I mean, springs are a perishable or a consumable, right?
Yeah. They
get used up. But after 5,000 rounds might be a little early, but
exactly.
At the same time, it's just the spring. It's not like the slide's breaking like on a Sig Mosquito or something.
Exactly. So, well, that's about all I did, Matthew. What did you get up to?
I did some quote-unquote hunting/mudding. Matt and I went out, and I've been out a couple of times actually without Matt as well, but the interesting time out was with Matt. We went out in my Pathfinder after I put the new mud and snow tires on it, so of course we had to go try it out and see if we could get stuck, and that's basically what it turned out to. It was a day of driving around trying to find the biggest mud puddle. we basically stopped hunting after about half an hour and just went and started exploring, and we got to the point where we got to a section of trail that... The truck, the trail had been flooded by beavers diverting a stream, and so we didn't want to drive the truck through it just because we didn't know if it was going to get deep. We were only about half an hour from home, so we decided to go home and get the four-wheelers instead.
So, this is a gun show, not a four-wheeler show.
Yeah, no, listen, I'm going somewhere with this. I'm going somewhere. You got to bear with me here, though.
Are you going to an archery shop?
I'm not going to an archery shop as much as you would enjoy that. So on the four-wheeler, because we are still quote-unquote hunting, I still have to have my gun with me, of course. And so I put, I have a gun, what do you call those little gun rack things you stick on? We have them on our tactical carts. What do you call those?
Oh, the... It's a rifle clamp.
It's a rifle clamp, sure.
Now you're calling it a cart.
Yeah, shut up, Owen. You who carries all your guns around everywhere. Listen, so anyway, I have those on my four-wheeler so I can carry a gun on the four-wheeler, and so I threw my Mossberg 500 on there because that's my go-to kind of grouse gun and hunting gun whenever it's this time of year. So I have that on, and we're driving down the trail, and we get to some, well, Matt likes to really explore, and we got into some pretty thick brush. The gun overhangs the side of the four-wheeler a bit. So whenever we came into a section where the four-wheeler would just fit through, well, the gun wouldn't because the gun was wider. And so I kept getting hung up on the barrel and on the butt. And on top of that, when I got home, it was all muddy. And it's a, you know, a pump-action shotgun, so it's got parts and you know, different things that need to be taken apart to properly clean it. So I had to take the whole thing apart and clean it, get all the mud out and the water out and re-oil it. Put it back together. It was a real pain in the butt just for, you know, having gone four-wheeling. So I decided I need to buy a new gun that's simpler, that is shorter and won't overhang the sides of the four-wheeler. And also, if it gets muddy and wet, I won't care about it. So I bought a new shotgun. It's made in Turkey, so it was quite inexpensive.
Okay.
It was $172. I think it was $210 shipped to my door. It's a Warrior is what it's called. Oh.
Remind me, Matthew, when you're done, to tell you the $99 shotgun story from the range today.
Okay, cool. In fact, I saw another one, a Dominion Arms $99 one, that was quite a problem. But anyway, whatever. These have been getting fairly good reviews from the people who've bought them so far. It's got a 16-inch barrel threaded for chokes. Comes with three different choke tubes. So 16 inches puts it at, 32 inches total width. Or total length, which is shorter than the length of my four-wheeler, so that means no problems there. It was inexpensive, so if I lose it or it gets broken or muddy, I don't really care. Not a big deal, and it'll be great for getting out in the woods and just kind of exploring with. It won't be a dedicated anything. It's an exploring gun. It's just a gun that I have with me whenever I'm out in the woods and want to have a gun with me, and I don't care about it a whole lot. So, on top of that, I got a insert for it. It's a 20-gauge. So I have a 20 gauge to 22 long rifle insert. So I can stick this insert in the gun. It's the size of a 20 or size of a 20 gauge shell, and it's got an offset rifled 22 barrel in it. And so you put your 22 shell in there, and the hammer still hits the rim because it's offset, and so you can shoot at things. They say within 25, 30 feet you get about an inch. So anything that's up close, grouse, rabbits, anything up close I don't want to blow apart like I've done in the past, I can put a 22 into it instead. So it's going to be fun to play with. Like you said, Trevor, it's inexpensive, it's cheap, it may not be the top quality.
Sounds like my prom date.
Yeah, but it's going to be fun, and looking forward to. That's funny.
Yeah.
So what happened with the 99 shotgun at the range?
So Burns shows up with this $99 Dominion thing that I don't know if Canon Ammo or Marstar or somebody's selling them, and Dominion brand... a case of Dominion brand triple lot buck, and he got like the gun and the case of ammo for like $200 or something. The guns are $99.
Yep.
He took it to the 22 section and then came back surprised that it was falling apart. the bead came out of the barrel and then the fore end came apart.
Yep, I know the fixes for both of those. I actually just Adriel.
So do I. It's called "Don't Buy $99 Shotguns."
Well, no, that's not the moral of the story, because some people only have $99, so we don't want to stop them from enjoying the shooting sports. Some people just want a gun that they don't really care a whole lot about and can just have some fun with, and some people want a gun that's a project gun they can work on. Well, they get all three with this. The bead is just a piece of brass rod pressed into the barrel. That's a problem because it's always going to be shot out. So what you can do, very simple, you can order on Brownells. It's less than $40. It's a tap and die set for shotgun beads, and it comes with beads as well. So you order that, you thread the barrel, and put a bead in it, a brass bead, and you're done.
$50 by the time you get it, right?
That's fine. whatever. I have one. If somebody needs it, I'll lend it to you. So you can get this done for inexpensive. In fact, you can buy, most people might even have a die set or tap and die set from Canadian Tire. I have one.
Now, what if you bought a $150 shotgun that the bead didn't fall off of?
Listen, I'm trying to help people out here. Stop being condescending.
Did I mention this was Burns?
Yeah. But this is for the other listeners out there who may have the same problems. Anyway.
The other listeners, don't buy a $99 shotgun.
Trevor.
Go ahead.
I'm done. Let's move on.
No.
I had solutions for the other problems too, but I'm not going to share them now. Because of Trevor, you can send hate mail to trevorfurlot@gmail.com.
To which I reply, don't buy a $99 shotgun.
Right.
And if you do, email Matthew and he'll give you his magical solutions for your cheap gun.
Not magical, but they are effective. You suck the fun out of everything, Trevor. What's upcoming events? Oh, it's me. I do upcoming events. We're having some stuff coming up soon. It's going to be fun. Main topic.
Wow. Oh, that was way better than I ever could have hoped for. I didn't see that coming at all. That was awesome. Thank you, Matthew. Thank you for hitting your own version of the go button.
I do what I can. Look, I've got a soft spot in my heart for cheap
$99
guns.
$99 guns, yeah.
I love them. Look, they're so much fun because they don't come perfect. And I love things that don't come perfect because I get to fix them, and I love fixing things. Anyway, so upcoming events, not important. We're going to move right into our main topic. And for our main topic this week, we have a former guest. I believe you've been on Slamfire before. It's Officer Frank. Officer Frank, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
This is an RCMP officer who goes by Officer Frank, who has graciously decided to join us once again. And we're going to talk about some more serious topics. First of all, I do want to say that we may not, and I'm speaking to you now, Officer Frank, not to the listeners, we may not all have the same opinions whenever we come to the end of the show here. We may disagree with some of the things you say. I just want to say off the bat, we're not disagreeing with you. We're disagreeing with our gun laws. We may be disagreeing with our politicians. We may be disagreeing with the RCMP in general, but not you. We would never disagree with our frontline officers. We have nothing but the utmost respect for all of our officers who are out there serving our communities. So for that, right off the bat, I just want to say thank you for doing that, for doing your job, for being a good officer. I know you personally, and so I know that you are. And I just want to make sure that you understand that we're not going to be personally attacking you in any way whatsoever, no matter what comes across on the show. So I just want to make sure that's clear.
Okay, well, that's clear. And you're allowed to disagree with me.
Oh, well, you're times the size of me, so I'm not going to.
Make sure you follow the speed limit.
Right.
But you're allowed to disagree.
I remember coming out of the range last time we were there. It was for the Daniel Shaw course, and we came to a four-way stop, and I saw that you were to my left on the four-way stop, and I had the right-of-way, and so I pulled out ahead of you, and you pulled in behind me. And I'm like, oh, great, yeah, here comes Officer Frank. And just as I was sort of thinking that, the red and blue lights come on, but they weren't for me. It was for the guy in the three-wheeler who scooted across the road right in front of me, and you went after him. It was good times. I laughed quite hard, and I really hoped you got him.
Nope.
Well, when they're on three-wheelers, it's hard to catch them because they can go anywhere.
Oh, we're not allowed to chase them either, so.
No fun. Mm. I don't think he had a helmet on either, did he?
No, he didn't.
What a numpty.
That's what went on, yeah. So, Matthew, I'm glad you cleared the air because he is sitting next to me.
Yes, he can punch you. So
yes, yeah. If he gets upset, I'm within the grasp. So.
That's right.
And I don't feel like getting tased tonight, so.
Yeah. Well, not till later.
Yeah. So. So a couple of things that we want to talk about. We have an email from a listener, as I did tell you, Officer Frank, about before. This all kind of pertains back to the unfortunate incident that occurred this summer. As a lot of the listeners know, shortly after that incident occurred, I wrote an article for the NFA Canadian Firearms Journal magazine. And it started quite a bit of debate about armed citizenry and whether or not civilians should have the right to carry for self-defense and protection. And so we want to kind of explore that a little bit. You've read the article. I want to hear your opinions on my opinion in the article. And we have a question from a listener who would like to know, basically, legally, and we'll do this second, what, if anything, would happen if a civilian would have gotten involved that day. So we'll come back to that later. So first of all, let's begin with the article. The premise of my article was that I felt that an armed citizen could have made a difference in Moncton that day, or armed citizens in general could have made a difference, because it's my opinion that the what are we calling him? Are we going to use his name? Are we going to call him? He's no longer the suspect.
The I don't know. I don't want to use his name.
There's
either.
A lot of and there's a lot of things I want to call him.
Yeah,
the perpetrator.
All right,
perpetrator, there you go.
We'll use that technical term. So it's my opinion that the perpetrator and people like him wouldn't have been so bold as to walk the street with arms, weapons, with the intention of harming people if we lived in a society that recognized our right for self-defense and allowed us to arm ourselves. And the analogy I use is, I don't think he would have done this in Texas. Because in Texas, the chances of him being confronted by an armed citizen are pretty high.
Yeah, if I can expand on that really briefly, when you look at the spree shootings that happen down in the States, because they do happen with some sort of regularity, which is unfortunate, but when you look at where they occur in gun-free zones. And I think that's really telling. And I think all of Canada is a gun-free zone, really, overall, unless you're out in the woods hunting grouse.
Or the police station.
Or yeah, you know, we are a gun-free zone. And so people, the criminals, the bad guys, if they want to go out and hurt people, they know they can pretty much walk around with impunity. That there's nobody can do anything to them.
It's come to light, Matthew, that the Colorado or the movie theater shooting that occurred in Colorado.
Aurora.
Yeah. That occurred. There were two movie theaters closer to his residence, and he avoided both of them because the one that he went to had signs posted saying gun-free zone.
Right.
So that's come to light after the fact that he actually chose a movie theater that was a gun-free zone for that very reason. And what we've learned, and I know, Officer Frank, that you're aware of this as well, every time an armed shooter who goes into a school or a mall or wherever to try and do one of these mass shootings, what happens whenever they're confronted with armed resistance every time?
Well, I don't know the exact statistics on this, but I give a lot of training into that immediate action rapid deployment protocol, and if they wanted to be in a gunfight, they would come to the police station. They don't want to be in a gunfight.
Right. They want to go where they're going to have unarmed victims.
Exactly. So if they're faced with the police, most of the time, they turn the gun on themselves.
Mm-hmm. The second they're confronted
with... This is what happened, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the same...
In most of the cases. Yeah. Again, it's not all the cases.
It's more often than not.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
And the training that I've had in threat assessment, level 1, level 2, we find that the person who goes to do these school shootings is generally suicidal before they go in. And so they plan on dying, but they want to go out with a bang before they die. Mm-hmm. And they either plan on taking their own life or death by cop. So that brings us back then to what happened in Moncton. Moncton was a little different. He set out to murder police officers.
Yeah.
He went out of his way to hide and ambush the first responders. So my question then is, do you feel that this incident may not have happened if we lived in a society where citizens carried guns and he knew that there's a good chance he was going to encounter armed resistance before the police even arrived?
It's hard to tell because, like, people walk on the street, Moncton, it happens often in Moncton, people walking on the street with a pellet gun. Here it happens too in Campbellton. We've had calls of people with pellet guns. So would you shoot a guy not knowing what he's got in his hands
mm-hmm.
when he's not a threat to anyone yet?
No.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point. I mean, just because you see him walking down the street with guns doesn't necessarily mean he's a threat. Because he just may not know. I mean, first of all, he may be out hunting and maybe he doesn't, maybe his truck broke down. The only way he can get out to the hunting range is, or the hunting spot is by walking through town with his guns. I mean, you would think he would have them cased, but you don't know for sure until you stop and ask him.
No, that's not the point, though, guys.
It's normal to call the police in a situation like that, but like,
the point that I'm making, though, is he was not walking with good intentions with those firearms.
Right.
Somebody walking to their neighbor's backyard with a pellet gun is going to their neighbors to shoot the pellet gun in the backyard.
Mm-hmm.
But this guy went out with malicious intent right from the get-go.
Yeah, but I think
he was able to walk on around without fear of confrontation because he knew he wouldn't be confronted by an armed citizen.
But what I think what Officer Frank is saying, that he may have been, even if we had armed citizenry, those armed citizens may have just simply assumed that that he was not a threat because, sure, he has a rifle, but it's not illegal to have a rifle. So maybe they wouldn't have done anything about it.
He didn't have a rifle. He had a rifle, a shotgun, and a crossbow.
Yeah.
That looks a little suspicious, right?
Sure, but it's still not illegal to do that, though.
No, but you're going to draw more attention to yourself than I would with a shotgun with a break open and an orange vest on.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. Yep.
It would, even with armed citizens, like a guy is walking on the side of the street with a gun in his hands, what do? You call the police.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're carrying a gun yourself.
Yep. It's not my job to stop him.
Exactly.
If he points it at me, then it's a different
then
story.
Then it's different. But in this case, he didn't point it at anyone.
No, every time he saw somebody, he told them to go back inside.
Exactly.
You know, he had no interest in civilians whatsoever. When he encountered a civilian, he said, go away.
Now, that brings up a more interesting point now, Trevor, is at that point, would having an armed citizenry maybe have made a difference? Because at that point, whenever you're walking down the street and you see a guy with guns, and he says, go back into your house, well, you would listen to him, but then... I mean, he's got a gun, right? But would he have felt that safety to just walk around and tell people to go in their house if people may have been armed?
See, that's my point. Would he have told just everybody he came across, go back inside, knowing that one of them could have had a gun and said, no, you need to drop your guns. I don't know what you're up to, but it's not right.
But don't forget, though, if everybody, let's put it this way there, if everybody's carrying a gun, you see someone with a gun, it's normal because everybody's
right.
carrying one.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, nobody points a gun at somebody in Texas for carrying a gun.
Exactly.
Because it's normal.
So they don't intervene because buddy has a gun, because I have one too and he's allowed to have one. I'm allowed to have one.
Yeah.
So if there was a case here, he's allowed to have a gun because I have one too.
That's right. When you
so
came
it changes the whole thing.
Yeah. When you came into my home tonight and saw a bunch of pistols on the table, did you think anything of it?
No.
No, it's no different than any other piece of furniture on my table because you come here all the time, there are guns here all the time, and you know that I'm not psychotic. I mean, it's your fault there are guns on this table. You introduced me to this. That's interesting. That's an interesting point.
But I think a lot of what is, you know, when you think about this situation specifically, because it's not citizens being targeted because it was law enforcement that he tells you to go inside, you go inside, whether you're carrying or not, because you're not stupid and you don't want to get into a gunfight because that's dumb.
That's gunfight's the one you don't have.
Exactly. I think the question is more after you're standing, this the what if of you're there, you're present when the person begins to shoot whoever he's planning to shoot, whether it's law enforcement or other, citizens, or, you're not the target, but somebody else is the target. That's, I think, more the question is at that point, do you say, I have a gun, I can carry this gun, and I'm going to shoot this person because they're causing someone else bodily harm?
And I think we should address that question and that comment in a second, Owen, but I think, first of all, I think it's important to hash out, would the perpetrator have felt comfortable doing what he did, knowing that civilians may or may not have been armed?
Right.
Not in he's just walking down the street with a gun, but just the entire overview of the entire incident. Would he have even thought about performing this act if he knew that there was a chance that he may be stopped before he was able to engage his targets? And I think the biggest part of an armed populace, the biggest reason why it is so effective, it's not that the people draw their guns and stop crimes. I think the reason why it's so effective is that overall it's a deterrent. Mm. I know when I go to Maine, Maine is a shall issue, concealed carry, open carry. You got a handgun, they don't care. You're happy. When I go there, I don't feel any less comfortable, but I am aware that I don't want to say that I'm on better behavior, but I'm a bit more aware of my behavior when I'm there because I know anybody could be armed. And I wouldn't think twice about performing a crime regardless, whether it was in Canada or in the United States, in Maine or whatever. But I know if I was going to, darn tootin', it wouldn't be in Maine because they have an armed population.
I'd like to know, though, how many crimes are stopped by armed citizens?
They estimate about a million a year. And these are estimations only because they have actual records of about 100 to 150,000 incidents where they can show crimes have been averted because of an armed population. They estimate it's way higher than that because they figure about 90% don't report because there was no crime to report.
The crime was averted. If a crime didn't happen, then what are
There's nothing to report.
Well, this is it. I mean, we're not talking about citizens going around trying to perform the duties of police officers. That's not what armed citizens are all about.
No.
Armed citizens don't use their guns to stop crime, to prevent crime. At MAG 40, I was taught by Masad Ayoub that in the United States, and I need to be very clear about that, in the United States, if you have a license to carry a gun, if you're in a store, let's say, and a person comes in to rob the store, you are within your rights to use your firearm to intervene, but you're not required to or obligated to.
Right.
And so you can keep your gun in your holster and mind your business, and that's fine. If you draw your gun and shoot the perpetrator and it's deemed a clean shoot, there
that's
won't be any
fine.
Charge. That's also fine. But citizens don't carry guns to go around and try and prevent crime. Citizens carry guns as a last resort to defend themselves.
Well, that's right. I mean, I have a fire extinguisher in my truck, but I don't drive around looking for house fires to go put them out.
Exactly.
I have it in case. I'll help if I need to, but I'm not going to go out of my way looking for it. And I think that's a lot of people when they say, oh, you want to carry a gun. What, you want to be a cop? You want to go and be a vigilante? I've been accused of vigilanteism or wanting to be a vigilante by several different people who just don't understand that I don't want the power of law enforcement. I simply want the ability to protect myself.
Yeah, I'm trained in first aid, but I'm not showing up for surgery at the hospital.
That's it.
You know, so. I mean, I don't, like I've said to Officer Frank, I enjoy hearing about the training that he does and the courses that he goes on, and especially the teaching part of it. I love all that part of law enforcement. I'd love to be involved in law enforcement, but I don't want to actually do the law enforcement part of the job.
You want to do the fun parts, not the driving around handing out ticket parts.
No, I mean, not even that. I don't want to. I will take responsibility for my own life.
Yeah.
But I certainly don't think I have what it takes to take responsibility to try and save somebody else's life. There's a huge obligation there. Like
that's
he's
right,
required
yeah.
to answer the phone and go somewhere where he may have to put his life on the line to defend somebody else's. That's a huge, huge sacrifice and step that I don't think I have what it takes to make. But when it comes to my own life or the life of my family, then that's a different story. That's, you know, that's where my line is.
Yep. And but, that's where, yeah.
So, but back to your question, Officer Frank, about you'd like to know, like, how many crimes in the United States are prevented by armed citizens?
There are a lot.
Yeah, but I think it's we have to be careful of the context of that question. I don't like I said, armed citizens aren't going around using.
They're defending themselves,
right?
And
in
most of the cases, I assume again.
Yes.
Yeah,
not necessarily defending others or. Yeah. But I just don't understand why
most of these people don't want to end up in a gunfight if they don't have to.
That's right.
So if there's someone robbing a bank. You don't start shooting at the suspect because he's taking money out.
That's right. It's only money and it's insured.
Exactly.
So coming back to Moncton and the shooting that happened in Moncton, many people have said that if I had seen the perpetrator in front of my home murder a police officer, you know, essentially in cold blood because it was an ambush. A lot of people have said that they would have shot him, whether from their house or went outside or whatever. And there's two schools of thought. Some people say that getting involved would have caused more problems. You would have put yourself at risk. You would have put your family at risk. You would have drawn gunfire. You're not trained, blah, 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 blah. So we'll go through this email that comes from Mark and, we'll kind of let you give us your opinion on it. So Mark wrote the show quite a while ago, And he said, hi, guys. First thing, guys, great show. Keep it up. I always look forward to this weekly podcast, and I've been following you guys since Canadian Reload Radio. I have a question about the Moncton shooting or a similar scenario. And Trevor, I want you to ask Officer Frank about this. What charge or charges, if any, would one receive if a civilian would have shot the shooter? See what I did there? I don't want to say his name.
Good for you. Same with us.
Yeah. And then called the police to advise them as such. Because I know 99% of IPSC shooters said I would have shot him. And Mark's right. Everybody I've seen on the range said I would have shot that bastard. So here's the scenario. He's in front of my home. I see him ambush a cop. He's still armed. I'm assuming more police officers are on the way. They're going to be ambushed. But that's a concern for me. But also, I'm concerned that he may try and come into my home. He may try and take refuge in my home. I grab my gun and I shoot him from the window and drop him in the street after I saw him shoot the cop, not before, because I have a whole different opinion on what would have happened if somebody would have shot him before he murdered a police officer. Mm-hmm. You'd be going down. There's no two ways about it. You go down for murder. There's too many ifs.
Yeah, the only way that would work is if you went out and confronted him and said, hey, what are you doing pointing that gun at that cop? And then if he swings around and points a gun at you, then you've got something to work with there. But if you just go out and shoot him in the back of the head because he's pointing a gun at a cop, you got nothing.
Even then it wouldn't work. You don't go out to confront him.
No, well, so. I suppose, yeah.
I listen, guys, there's too many right and wrong answers to a question like that. This is very hard to answer. Because it would be an investigation that would take, I don't know how many weeks, we'll say, to complete in a situation like that where a civilian would have shot the guy. Then charges, I don't know, honestly, it would depend on the outcome of the investigation. Just to give you a quick something to think about is the police didn't shoot him.
Yeah, that's true. The police didn't even shoot him. So, you know, we're now saying, well, a civilian should have shot him. Well, the police didn't even shoot him.
He wasn't actively shooting people
at that point, yeah.
They located him, so, and he dropped his guns and gave up.
So what about this then, Officer Frank? Say you're in your squad car, you're on duty, and you see him, you're behind him, and you see him shoot an officer. At that point, what do you do as a police officer? Are you required to challenge him, or can you just neutralize him immediately?
Well, when the police shoot at someone, we'll say, it's not because of things he did.
Right.
It's because of what we think he will do.
That's right. The ongoing threat, which is the rationale I would use for he murdered one cop. He's probably going to murder another one stop him. It's a lesser of two evils.
But again, what is he doing after he shot that police officer?
Mm-hmm.
Is he putting his guns on the ground? Is he keeping walking? Is he going home to have a drink of water because he did what he wanted to do? He wanted to shoot only one. It's too gray. I cannot give you guys a clear answer.
That's a good point because
too many ifs and too many. It's.
Exactly.
This is why you're here because how you are trained and educated to look at these situations. They're not cut and dry, and you have that experience of investigation on your side, which we don't.
Yeah.
I think you raise an interesting point there, Officer Frank, is that when you were saying that the police don't shoot somebody because of something that they've done, and a lot of people are under the impression that when you have a gun, you're now judge, jury, and executioner. And they have this opinion that cops are, and I've talked to people who have this opinion that cops are judge, jury, and executioner. If they see you robbing a bank, they'll shoot you in the back as you run away. Well, that's not what police do. You don't shoot people because they've done something. You shoot people to stop them from doing something, whether it's harming somebody else or harming you. You shoot in self-defense or you shoot for the defense of an innocent life only, as I understand it. And I think it's really important that any civilians, because I know we have a lot of American listeners who do carry firearms for self-defense, I think it's really important to stress that your gun comes out to protect innocent life only. It doesn't come out to revenge. It doesn't come out because you're angry. It doesn't come out for any other reason than to protect innocent life. That's it. There's no other reason to carry a gun, in my opinion.
We covered this in Mag 40 as well. Masada, you called it shooting a fleeing felon.
Mm-hmm.
And when is it legal to shoot a fleeing felon? And quick definition was when it's It's, again, the lesser of two evils. If letting him go will cause more harm than shooting him. If you have evidence or proof that he is off to cause more harm, then it's actually better to shoot him than let him go. Because he could go on and kill three or four other people.
If I have reasons to think
that you can prove.
This will happen.
Yeah, reasons that you can prove. Yeah, and that's the important part.
And, like, basically, the way we're explaining this is, can I convince 12 people that I did the right thing?
Yeah. Can you articulate? Can you authenticate? Yeah.
Am I able to convince 12 people that, is a jury, basically?
Yeah.
So can I convince a jury that I did the right thing?
Yeah. Would any reasonable person
in my situation
would have done the same thing? In my situation, would they have done what I did?
Exactly.
And if the answer is yes, then you're going to be fine.
Yeah.
So basically what it boils down to is all of these IPSC shooters and everybody else, I'm not just going to blame IPSC shooters, if the perpetrator, they witnessed him shoot the police officer and then they came out and shot him, I would say probably with the current laws that we have now, the person who shot the perpetrator would also become a perpetrator and would also be charged in my understanding of what... Sorry, Trev?
I disagree. I know where you're coming from, but...
Only because I don't know what the perpetrator's thought patterns are. I don't know if he's leaving to go home. I don't know if he's leaving to go shoot another police officer. I don't know. Unless I ask him to know what he's going to do, I don't think I have a right to get involved.
Right. Well, we know what happened. We know he was determined to engage and try and kill more police officers, and he did. And if he had been shot on the spot, no other police officers would have died. How do you prove that you knew he was going to continue to kill? That's the crux, right?
That's it, yeah. And that's why I think it's really, really dicey to say,
yeah,
I would have shot him.
I shot him because he shot that cop. Well, that comes back to what Officer Frank said. Well, you can't shoot him for what he did.
Yeah.
Like, let's just put it in a fist fight, okay? If somebody punches me in the face, he turns around and walks away, and I punch him in the back of the head, then I'm assaulting him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if he punches me once and I see him getting ready to punch me again, then I'm allowed to punch him because he's about to punch me again. Then it becomes self-defense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's the same case here, but with a gun.
And right? It's funny. It's the exact same analogy that I use with my students in school. If somebody hits you and walks away, come report. If you're being hit, defend yourself.
That's right.
Do what you need to do to stop the assault and then come report.
Yeah. And you're also, we're talking about self-defense, but you can also defend someone else.
Depending on,
again, it's a gray line.
Well,
it's not
Matthew,
black and white. It's always gray.
That's why Matthew hangs around people that are bigger than him.
That's right, because they can defend me.
Yeah.
That's why you run so fast.
That's right. I got no other defense. I've got to run fast. Yeah. I'm not allowed to carry a gun.
Sorry, Owen.
I know this is getting maybe a little hypothetical and a little bit.
That's okay. We got time still. Go ahead.
Kind of nitpicking on the situation, but what if it's a situation where the person hasn't shot someone yet? They've got a gun. They're behind the person. They've got the gun raised. They're pointing it at them. Their intent is very obvious. And you have it within your means, whether it's a gun or whether it's a stick or whether it's, maybe you're within arm's reach of the person. At what point are you justified because you are defending a life at that point, potentially? Do we don't say, well, we have to wait until he pulls a trigger before we can do something, do we?
Yep. Let me grab this one, Frank, and then tell me if I'm wrong. Because I think, Owen, and the prosecutor would rip you apart, especially if you were inside your house. He would say, you're not a cop. How do you know that the officer wasn't about to have this person surrender their gun? You weren't privy to the conversation. You couldn't hear what was said. You have no way of knowing whether or not that person was at that very second you pulled the trigger about to put their gun down.
Right. I'm not disagreeing with you. And again, I'm just throwing out.
That's my opinion about how that one would go in Canada. I think you'd get screwed hard for that one in Canada.
Again, it's the line is very thin. It's a gray zone, and
each situation is going to be different, right?
Each
situation is fluid. It's dynamic. You don't know what's happening until you're there and it's happening, and there may be nuances that you'll be able to pick up on that will tell you for sure, this guy's freaking out and he's about to shoot that guy. Well, then maybe if you can prove later on that you knew that this was going to happen, then perhaps you could be, you know, exonerated. But I think for sure, no matter what happens, you're getting charged if you intervene, especially if you intervene with lethal force. If you intervene with non-lethal force, then maybe the cops might say, thanks, man, and he'll give you a pat in the back and let you go home. But,
if I end up in a situation like you said, Owen, okay, it's two people, one guy's pointing a gun at somebody else or a stick or a baseball bat, whatever. The first thing the police will do is, please stop.
Right.
Start using your command voice.
Yeah.
It'll go once, drop the bat, whatever, drop the gun, once, twice, depending on the officer, depending on the experience, depending on all kinds of things. Maybe it'll go for a half hour. I don't know.
Yeah.
The warnings, you know, it depends, again, on the situation. But the first thing we're trained to do is please stop. If a guy is shooting at me, then it's different.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The owner, because he won't hear the police stop because the gunshots are going to be louder than my voice.
So let's change the situation just really briefly, another hypothetical. Say the perpetrator was firing at the police officer, but he had an SKS, so he couldn't hit anything. It's crap shot. So maybe he's shooting at the officer. The officer's not down yet. The officer may be returning fire. The officer may be taking cover, whatever. You're in your house. You see this out through your front window. You see the perpetrator engaging the officer. You know the officer's life is in danger because he's actually shooting at him. Then you decide, I'm going to shoot him.
Yeah, he actively has an officer pinned.
Yeah.
And so you say, okay, the officer's trapped. All he has is a 9mm. This guy's got an M305.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. SKS, Trevor, SKS, come on.
Oh, sorry.
Remember, he wasn't hitting anything with it. Right. So now, in your opinion, because I think all of us can agree that the correct course of action there is to do the best you can to help prevent innocent life from being lost. So you engage. So say you engage and you're successful. In your opinion, not whether or not this is what we think would or what we want to happen, but what do you think would happen? Would the person who engaged the perpetrator and put him down, would they be charged? What kind of trouble would they be in? Based on current Canadian law, your experience.
And with your exact scenario.
Right.
Nothing else different.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the worst that could happen to the guy shooting would be unsafe storage.
Which is interesting because that's the same charge that Ian Thompson got trumped up on, even when he could prove that he got his gun out in time.
It's not unsafe storage because I'm in control of it. If I walk away, that's unsafe storage.
Yeah, we're not arguing with Officer Frank, and we're not arguing with...
You know what I'm saying, guys, though? It's
That's the default, and that's the answer that I wanted, because that's the default charge, is what you tend to see happen. Anytime anything with a gun happens, one of the charges invariably is unsafe storage. And it's just because... Let's throw that and see if it sticks to the wall, because let's get him with something just so we can get him into the court system. And I'm not attacking anybody on this. I'm just saying this is what happens. I've seen it happen more times than I can count.
But don't forget, guys, this is my personal opinion.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Like, there's no investigation done now. There's nothing like this.
Yeah.
Things could go a completely different way, and don't use what I just said.
Oh, no, of course.
If you end up in court, then you have
to... Officer Frank said!
I heard a guy on the podcast one day, and that's what he said.
And that's a good one.
We say it often. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Exactly. We do not offer legal advice.
That's right.
Any kind. Yeah,
that's a good time to bring that up, obviously.
I am not an advisor.
No.
In a court system.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting point. And like I said, that is what I would expect would be to happen. And like you were arguing, Trevor, that's not what we want to happen, though. And it doesn't make sense that we would get those charges, because obviously the guns are in use. They're not being stored at that moment. If they're in the hand of a licensed individual, for whatever reason, if you have it out of the gun safe or the trigger lock off, that's your business. You're in care and control of it. It's not in storage, so you shouldn't get an unsafe storage charge. But, like Officer Frank said, that's probably what you're going to get, because that's what everybody gets. And it's not a fault on anybody here on the show right now, but I think that's a fault with our system. And our system needs to realize that there are other uses for guns than just target practice and hunting.
But again, I said storage because I assume the gun was not on the table at that time. You know, because Buddy was not cleaning it.
Right. Mm.
Like in my house, the guns are stored in storage in a vault. So if something happens in the street, it'll take me a couple of minutes to get it out. And,
that's unfortunate.
And up and running.
It would take me under a minute, and I could have a gun ready to engage. And they're safely stored legally.
Yeah. Well, anyways. But
so, you know
what I mean? It would be a minute minimum for most of the people.
For most people, and you're right. And I think that's why people would get this unsafe store charges, and that's probably why Ian Thompson got his. But as he proved on video, he was able to access his firearms in less than what the prosecutor thought he should be able to do it in. And he did it faster. And so they had to drop that charge. But I see where he's coming from is because a normal person wouldn't be able to access their guns that quickly.
Yeah. Well, and as I've said before, unauthorized access means you, Officer Frank, you're not supposed to be able to access my firearms. Mm-hmm. But there's no law that says I can't access them quickly. I have access to them, but you don't. Yeah. It's to keep you, not me. But in this case, like he said, the Ian Thompson case, it got so desperate that they actually said this. Your home is so small. It doesn't matter where the ammo was kept in relation to the gun. It was too close.
Yeah. That's how desperate they got, which is absolute horse crap.
So you should have had a bigger house.
prosecution should have bought him a bigger house to help him stay law-abiding. So, that's interesting. There were some points there that we certainly didn't consider, right? There has to be an investigation. All things have to be considered. It's not cut and dry. And I think the one thing that, you know, if you're going to engage this guy, you can't engage him for what he did. You have to be able to articulate and authenticate and convince 12 people that you didn't shoot him because he shot that cop. You shot him because of what he was going to do next.
Yeah, and if he had put up a YouTube video or a Facebook manifesto or whatever, and you happened to have seen that and you knew that his mission was to go out and shoot as many cops as he could, maybe at that point you had some sort of proof and evidence that he was going to continue on, and maybe then you could have shot him and gotten away with it. But
again, is he the one who wrote that thing?
Yeah, how do you know, right? Exactly. And I was just trying to come up with a situation where I could think of where, you know, you had some sort of evidence. But I don't think there is any sort of evidence that we could come up with reasonably in this situation where you could witness him shoot that officer and then go engage him. I think the only way you could have done that, and this would be dumb, and I don't recommend doing this, but if you were to challenge him and you went out and said, hey, what are you doing? No. But that's the dumbest thing you could ever do.
That's so right. If you challenged him, you're asking for it.
Yeah.
Again, coming back to Mag 40, articulate and authenticate, and you have to be able to convince the jury that knowing what I know, you would have done the same thing. So what is it that you know that the average person doesn't know? You need to get training. You need to understand what furtive movement is. You need to understand firearms. You need to understand some tactics. I mean, if he was standing there with the gun on the ground and his hands over his head, it's a lot different from he was reloading and pointing the gun at my house.
Yeah.
He was walking towards my home, pointing the gun at my home.
And I don't mean to insult anyone, but...
Oh, go ahead and insult Trevor, though. That's fine.
a civilian, okay, will not... Like we said earlier, if a civilian carries a gun, it's to protect his own life, not to protect the community as a whole.
Right.
So a civilian will not get involved in a gunfight where he shouldn't be.
I agree.
You got two guys shooting at each other. Not a third guy is going to jump in and start shooting at those two guys to make them stop shooting.
And you know why? Because then you're going to come to find out the guy you shot was an undercover cop. And now you're going to jail for the rest of your life.
But and it's funny because that brings...
This could be it or not. But in a sense that people don't want to get into a gunfight. I don't want to get into a gunfight, but I'm ready to do it if I have to.
Yeah. No, that brings up two interesting stories, Trevor. I've heard and I've read news stories of both of those sort of incidents happening, one where an undercover police officer was shot and killed by a uniformed police officer because the uniformed police officer just simply didn't know what was going on. It came down to no charges filed because in a reasonable situation, anybody would have done the same thing. It was just unfortunate that the undercover officer didn't have his credentials out when the whole situation went down. But on the flip side of that, I've also read at least two incidents now where an armed civilian in the States has come to the aid of a police officer who was engaged actively in a firefight and managed to kill or neutralize the person shooting at the police officer. And in both cases, no charges were filed against that third person who intervened because he saw that there was somebody who was in a situation and they were out, you know, they weren't in a fair fight, I guess. You know, I mean, when you're exchanging firearms or exchanging bullets, it's never fair. So he engaged because he had a clear shot and ended up stopping the situation and possibly saving the police officer's life. But like I said, in both cases, they did not file charges against a third person. And I think that's a very, very rare event. That's not something that you would count on, but it is interesting to note that it has happened.
What's everybody's reaction to gunshots if it doesn't happen at the range?
Run away.
That's exactly the proper reaction for most people, yeah.
Exactly. So if some people start shooting across the street from here, from, let's say, Trevor's house, I know what Trevor's going to do. He's going to run upstairs, get his gun, and just stay in the house to defend his property, his life, his house. Right. But he's not going to go out in the street and get involved in it.
That's right. And that's what you're not supposed to do that. And you're absolutely correct. And that's what
you're supposed to take the phone and go 911.
Yep.
Some people are shooting at each other in the street in front of my place.
Yep.
Send the police and the police will come.
That's right. And that's the proper response, I think. The situation where the person had gotten involved, he was walking down the street and saw the whole incident unfold. He was in a very rare situation.
Exactly.
I said, it's not that is not the common.
Yeah, he wasn't looking for a situation.
No, he just happened to be at the right place at the right time. Yeah. But like I said, I just wanted to bring up the point that
he didn't hear gunshot and ran towards the gunshot.
No, it happened in front of him.
So, yeah, exactly.
You know, that's a different situation, of course, completely. But I just wanted to point out that, you know, sometimes civilians do help out.
Yeah.
So,
but it comes like you and I were talking one time, Matthew, about going down and checking if you hear a bang or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You know. Knowing the difference between a cat bang and a door getting kicked in.
Right.
Like Francois said, I'm calling 911, but I'm doing it with a gun in my hand. And if I hear for a fact there's somebody downstairs, I'm going to challenge them from upstairs and say, I've called the cops. Yeah, I've called the cops. I've got a gun. Stay downstairs. Do not come upstairs. I've got a gun.
Yeah, no. Yeah, exactly. Stay downstairs, would you? Just sit down, make yourself a sandwich. Cops will be here in a minute.
Yeah, get out of my house, right?
Yeah.
But I'm not going downstairs.
No.
They have to come to me. They have to threaten me.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm not bringing the fight to them under any circumstances whatsoever.
This is exactly, like, we'll do that with a barricaded suspect. We won't. The guy's in his house. He's got a gun. He fired a couple of shots through the window. We're not going to fly in the house, even if we have all the ballistic protection in the world. We're going to bring him to us without his guns.
Yeah.
So it's the exact same thing here. We're not going to put ourselves in a situation where you shouldn't be. He's alone in his house. The only life in danger right now is his.
That's right.
We'll wait till he comes out. We'll cut the power, let him freeze a little bit. When he's cold enough, he'll come out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or he runs out of smokes.
Food, whatever.
When he sobers up, all of a sudden it's not a good idea.
And we'll do the same thing with an hostage situation. We'll wait. We'll talk it out. Because right now there's two lives in danger. If we burst in with a SWAT team.
Yeah, now there's 12 lives in danger.
Another 12 lives in danger.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, I think the bottom line here is don't be stupid with your guns. Don't go looking for a fight. And keep them safely stored, even if you can get at them quickly.
Yeah.
Well, Officer Frank, I want to thank you very much for joining us this week. It was really insightful. I think the listeners are really going to enjoy it. We got to have you back on again sometime and maybe talk about something a bit more cheerful.
Training.
And again, I've said it before. I just want to make it clear. This is personal opinion.
Absolutely.
I do not represent my employer, which is the RCMP.
Yep.
So what I said is my personal opinion.
That's right. Don't write angry letters to the superintendent.
Yeah. And don't use what I said to...
It's not gospel.
Because it's not going to work.
No. Like Trevor said, this is entertainment purposes only. This is just, you know, us guys hashing it out, talking about interesting hypothetical situations. So anyway, like I said, though, thank you for joining us. We will have you on again. Maybe we can talk some training or something. It's interesting to note Officer Frank is one of the training officers for the carbine project training? Or whatever. Yeah, carbine training.
C8.
So it would be really fun to talk to you about some of that stuff too, but that'll be the next time. So, well, once again, just want to thank Officer Frank for joining us for that last section there. Let's move on to some listener feedback. Trevor, we have actually, first of all, I want to point out we have a ton of listener feedback this week, and what we've decided to do is cover two of them that are sort of pertinent to, because they're short, basically, is what it boiled down to. They're short. They're not pertinent at all. They're short. So we're going to read these two short ones because they're short, and we have only 10 minutes left to burn up. So we figured we'd read these. Next week, we're going to do a special listener feedback episode. So if you want your email read or you have a question for us, next week is your chance. We're reading everything. So send us an email, send us a Facebook, whatever you like. Email's best. So obviously, we're going to get all Facebooks. But yes, send us your questions. We're entertaining them next week, so get them ready. So this week, Trevor, I want to kick us off here with Ross's email, and we'll move on from there.
Ross says, gents, a fashion question would normally go to my wife. She doesn't observe the same fashion tents I do. If you Google, you'll see many different types of camo. On the beach, desert camo. In the winter, snow camo. At night, at the opera, hey, there's even urban camo. A decent-sized walk-in closet should be able to hold your various camo and footwear. You need to dress for the environment. While I trust her judgment on this next question, not so much. Just added a pre-64.
Hold on. Did he just write that entire paragraph to let us know that he was about to ask us a question?
Just added a pre-64 94 to my collection. Very good condition. And for this, Ross, I hate you. The assault rifle that won the West, and it's true too. Would it be gauche, a firearm, fashion, faux pas, to put a red dot on it? Oh my God, Ross.
No, absolutely not. No, what you need to do though is put a wooden red dot on it. It's got to match the furniture.
If you put a red dot on a pre-64, I'm coming out there.
No,
put one. I may not win the fight, but I'm starting it.
I think...
That is as bad as scoping it, almost as bad as scoping it, not quite, but almost.
I disagree. I think a nice lever action with a decent scope is just, it's beautiful. I love it.
No, it's not.
No, it is. Now, here's the thing. Ross, a red dot sight is faster to use. It's easier to use in your open sights if you're out hunting stuff with this.
Are you seriously encouraging him to do this?
Oh, yeah, just because it's making you and Owen squirm.
If you want to put a red dot on the lever action, do it on that god-awful Mossberg abortion thing. Don't do it on a pre-64 model 94.
Here's what you do, Ross, is you take the wood off the pre-64 94 and you put synthetic on.
Put a stop to this.
All right, Owen, bring us this next one from Tammy, and then we're going to have to sign all off right here.
Yes. Okay, this one comes from Tammy, who says, this is the first year my daughter has not only hunted, but actually shot a gun. She shot 3 grouse on her first trip out.
I'm jealous.
And I have huge shout out to this girl who in her first hunt out has shot more grouse than Matthew and I put together this year. Actually, maybe more than all three of us.
No, Trevor shot 2 and I've shot 2, so that's 4.
Okay.
How many did you get, Owen?
Nothing.
So I've gotten 2, so I'm only 1 less than a girl. Trevor's 1 less than a girl, but he went deer hunting with his TAC-21, so that's +2. Owen, I'm sorry, you're still -3 on this girl.
I know, it's awful. It is embarrassing.
It's all right. Carry on.
Anyway, she goes on to say that I will be pleased that she didn't call them partridge.
I am also pleased.
Yes, I've had to correct her a few times.
Oh, good.
Now my husband is eager to buy her one for Christmas. Not a grouse, that is a gun.
Oh.
I've been polling people for advice because my husband saw a Coach gun in the Cabela's catalog that he thinks would be perfect for her. He says that she will be able to shoot both birds and deer with it. Upon questioning my husband more closely, it appears he's keen on this gun mostly because it's cool and he can use it too.
that's like the time Marge bought Homer bought Marge a bowling ball that said Homer on it.
Yeah. She says, I would prefer to buy something geared towards you so she is both safe and able to use the gun effectively. I'm not a go big or go home person, so I'm not keen on the concept of growing into a firearm. Kaylin does best when she is comfortable with equipment, and if she can't shoot it well, then she'll stop shooting. We've been down this path of archery and trying to push her into a better bow. She keeps going back to her Genesis and does just fine with it. Can you folks offer any suggestions on brand, model, gauge, etc.? Should I buy new or a secondhand a good option for youth? Any information you can send my way would be greatly appreciated. And that email comes from Tammy, who works the same place I do.
338 Apua.
Yeah, or 50, yeah. 50, yeah, 50 cal, like a BMG, probably would be fine. Just to get the big one, though, not the little one. She'll grow into it. No, there's all kinds of questions here we got for you. First of all, 22 or shotgun? I think you're talking shotgun.
I think she's probably looking more for shotgun.
A coach gun, no.
I would say don't get a coach gun.
Coach gun will kick like a mule. It's too lightweight.
They are cool, though. Actually, a double barrel coach gun's not that bad because they are quite heavy, especially if you can get a 20 gauge. The problem with that is, yes, the barrels are shorter, but the stock isn't. It's still going to be too big for her. If I don't know how old Kaylin is. If she's under, I don't know, it's probably less than 15, I would say. I'm guessing.
Yeah.
You're probably going to want a youth-sized shotgun, and I would recommend either Remington or Mossberg. They both offer youth models, and you can get them in either 20 gauge or 410. I would recommend 20 gauge, but if she is recoil shy, you could go 410. But the problem with that is 410 has such a narrow shot stream; it's hard to hit targets with it. 20 gauge is an excellent gross gun; does not kick very hard. Especially in a nice pump action. The pump actions are a little bit heavier. She can carry a few more shells in the gun. And I would recommend a youth model Remington or Mossberg pump action 12 gauge and 20 gauge. Those are my recommendations. I don't know if either of these other two guys have any ideas.
Those were basically along the lines of what I told her as well.
But no coach gun.
Yeah. And what they were looking at, because she showed me the sight or showed me the picture, it wasn't a real true coach gun. Coach gun has quite short barrels.
Yeah, usually 18 inches.
Yeah, these didn't look like they were that short.
Okay.
So more of a side-by-side.
Yeah.
So.
Well, they are a bit misleading because coach guns generally have very short forearms, which make the even 18-inch barrels look long on them. So
yeah.
It could still have been. But the other problem you run into with inexpensive coach guns is they don't often have screw-in chokes. They just have fixed chokes. And for hunting, you always want screw-in chokes. That way you can adjust for different times of year.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Well, thank you for writing in. And like I said to everybody else, we're going to get to your emails next week. And to everybody else who didn't write in, go ahead and write in because we're covering all the emails next week. So go crazy. I just want to go ahead and say, as I scroll down to my script, be sure to join both of our national firearms organizations, the CSSA and the NFA. They both do wonderful things for Canadian firearms community. So go ahead and sign up. Check us out on Gun Owners of Canada. We have a little mini forum there where we have little discussions. Actually, we don't. Most of it's on Facebook. Speaking of Facebook, head over to Facebook, like our page. All kinds of cool stuff happens there. Anytime a new video or picture or article comes out, one of us guys is always posting it on there, and there's usually good discussion on it there. So go check us out on Facebook. Also, please remember to go check out the Reno Viola Outdoor Web Radio Network. They have a new app. You can download it to your BlackBerry, or you didn't mute your mic there, Trevor. Good job.
Can't remember.
So anyway, yeah, listen to them. We are on prime time on Fridays, 9 o'clock, or sorry, 7 o'clock on Fridays, I believe, on the Reno Viola Outdoor Web Radio. We're also on there a few more times, once in the afternoon on a Friday, and a couple times 1 o'clock in the morning. So if you're up late, you can check us out there. They've also got a lot of other cool shows, and as well the Crusader Podcast Network. They got all kinds of really neat stuff. It's an international network, if you will, shows from both sides of the border, all kinds of cool stuff. So go check them out too. Anyway, thank you again for downloading, listening, and subscribing. Thank you again to Officer Frank for joining us. I'm Ron Burgundy.
The hell you are.
Owen Flewelling, and Owen is grouseless.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something. When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.